Hello and welcome to our program, Money Matters, brought to you by OWL Radio and the Low Vision Resource Center. I am Deb Parsons, and during the next half hour, I will be reading articles from Kiplinger Magazine and Forbes here on OWL Radio. First up today is an article under Rewards, Negotiate a Better Deal. For a price break on a number of products and services, all you have to do is ask. But first, read up on tactics the experts use, by Daniel Bortz. The very thought of haggling, no matter what you're haggling for, creates a crushing wave of anxiety in a surprising number of people. And while some personality types jump at the chance of striking a deal, many of us avoid negotiating at all costs. But negotiating skills can be learned. And knowing how to negotiate when you're buying a new car, making an offer on a house, or asking for a cheaper cable or internet bill, or even planning a wedding, can save you a lot of money. Here's how to get what you want for the price that you deserve. A new car. Supply shortages and high demand are driving up car prices. The average price of a new car hit a record $41,378 in August, jumping 16% from the previous year, according to J.D. Power. Automakers have been struggling to manufacture enough cars because of a computer chip shortage and other factors related to the pandemic. Nonetheless, there are ways to negotiate with new car dealers, says Ronald Montoya, a senior consumer advice editor at industry analyst Edmunds. Be flexible with features. In a balanced market, you're in a better position to negotiate for a car that has every feature that you want, but that's not the case today. You may, however, score a deal if you're flexible on options. Right now, you may have to be a little less picky if you want to negotiate a lower purchase price, says Joe Weisenfelder, executive editor of Cars.com. Opting for a less popular color could also save you a couple $100, he adds. Compare apples to apples. Pitting dealers against each other is a tried and true tactic, Weisenfelder says, but before you start shopping around, make sure that you know which trim level and options are your must-haves so that you can get comparable quotes. Ask for the dealer's lowest out-the-door price, says Montoya. Also, ask for a breakdown of fees and ask questions if you don't know what a fee is for. Negotiate the sales price before you talk financing. More than half of a dealer's revenue comes from service and financing contracts, says Weisenfelder, so the dealer's goal is to sell you not only a car, but also an auto loan and any other extras such as an extended warranty. If you're planning to pay cash for a new car or get a car loan from a different lender, Weisenfelder suggests that you do not tip your hand about your payment method while you're haggling over the car's price. Trade in your car at the same dealership. Selling your trade-in to the same dealer can put you in a stronger position when negotiating a new car purchase, especially in today's market. Dealers are clamoring for trade-ins right now, given that there's a huge shortage of used cars, Weisenfelder explains. Bonus, if you trade your car at a dealer instead of selling it to a private party, most states charge sales tax only on the difference between the price of your trade-in and the vehicle you're buying. Hate haggling? Let a professional do it for you. If you're not comfortable negotiating, consider hiring a car broker who charges a flat rate to shop around and negotiate on your behalf. Many car brokers are former car salespeople who know the trade from the inside out. A car broker's fee generally costs between $200 and $1,000, according to Autolist.com, but you typically reduce the cost of the vehicle by at least the amount you pay for the service. One service that doesn't accept compensation from car dealers on the back end is the nonprofit Car Bargains, www.carbargains.org. For $250 for a new car purchase or $375 for a lease, you specify the make, model, and trim level of the vehicle that you want, and Car Bargains shops at least 5 dealers in your area. A home. Home buyers have experienced serious sticker shock over the past year and a half. And because there continues to be extraordinarily high demand from buyers and an acute shortage of homes for sale, home prices are still on a tear. Existing homes sold for a median price of $359,900 in July, up from $305,600 in July 2020, according to the National Association of Realtors. Unless a house is grossly overpriced, homes are selling within days and with multiple offers, reports Adam Linder, a real estate agent with Northrop Realty based in Rehoboth Beach, Delaware. Indeed, homes typically remained on the market for just 17 days in July, NAR says. In a seller's market, Linder says, buyers must use creative tactics when making and negotiating a home offer. Make a cash offer. Although mortgage rates are enticing, the average rate of a 30-year mortgage was 2.87% at the beginning of September, according to Freddie Mac. Nearly one-third of U.S. home purchases so far this year have been all cash deals, a Redfin survey in July found. Making a cash offer can be a winning bidding war strategy. If you're paying in cash, you have an automatic leg up because sellers are looking for security, Linder says. Sellers want to be confident that the sale will close, and cash buyers can give that to them by waiving their financing and appraisal contingencies. Offer a leaseback agreement. With homes selling so quickly, sellers who put their house on the market before purchasing their next home may be enticed by a leaseback offer. A leaseback, or rentback, is an arrangement in which someone sells their home and then rents the property from the new homeowner, typically for up to 60 days. Want to make your bid more attractive? You could offer to pay for the seller's utilities while they're renting the property from you, or offer a free leaseback if you know that you're facing a lot of competition. No matter what, make sure to charge the seller a refundable deposit to cover any damage that they do to the property while they're renting from you. Get creative. We've seen a lot of creativity from buyers in this market, says Natasha Tello, a real estate broker at Keller Williams Realty in Miami. A few strategies that buyers are offering include disposing of a seller's furniture, paying for a seller's moving costs, covering any appraisal gap, waiving a home inspection contingency, except for major repairs, and paying part of a seller's closing costs. Cable and internet bills. U.S. households shell out $116 per month on average for their cable and internet bill, according to a recent report from Doxo, a bill payment service. Your bill can easily exceed $200 if you subscribe to premium channels and high-speed internet. The good news is that you have ways to lower your cable and internet costs without giving up your favorite shows or a fast internet speed. Compare providers and plans. Although the U.S. has more than 2,800 internet service providers, most markets only have two or three, says Ben Kurland, co-founder of BillFixers, www.billfixers.com, a company that negotiates with TV, internet service, cellular, and landline companies on behalf of consumers. BroadbandNow.com makes it easy to compare plans, prices, and customer ratings for the internet providers where you live. The website also shows what the average internet plan costs in your area. Still, calling the providers to discuss their plans and pricing is a good idea, because many cable and internet companies offer new promotions frequently. Call on a weekday. When you renegotiate your bill, Curlin recommends calling the company on a weekday during the afternoon. Most customers aren't calling during that time, so you're going to get much shorter hold times, he says. Also, senior-level representatives tend to work the main shift, and they tend to be more familiar with the latest promotional offers. Talk to the cancellation desk. Ask to be connected to the company's cancellation department. That will take you to a retention representative, and retention reps typically have access to the best available rates and promotions, says Curlin. Joseph Supan, a senior writer at AllConnect, a company that helps customers compare internet and TV plans, says it's important to stay calm and collected. Kill the agent with kindness, he advises. Instead of saying, "You just raised my plan to a ridiculous price and I want to cancel my service," say, "I'd really like to stay with your company, but my new rate is out of my price range. Is there anything you can do for me?" Turn down the first offer. It never hurts to play hardball, Supan says. Translation? Don't accept the agent's first offer. You can often get a better deal if you push back. Customer retention representatives have a list of codes for promotions, and their goal is to retain you as a customer for the highest-priced plan that they can, says Curlin. Offer to sign a long-term contract. If you're not planning on moving anytime soon, see whether your provider will lower your monthly rate if you sign a long-term contract, such as a 2-year subscription. It's pretty common to see a $10 per month discount when you sign a long-term contract, says Kurland. Can't get a better price? Ask for free perks. If your provider won't lower the price, Kurland suggests asking for freebies like faster internet or 6 months of free HBO. But mark your calendar for when the promotion will expire, he says. Call in the pros. This author used Bill Fixers, which lowered his cable and internet bill by $30 a month, saving him $180 over a year. The company takes 50% of what it saves consumers in the revised deal's first 12 months. Wedding costs. With many couples downsizing weddings because of COVID-19, the average cost of a wedding dropped from $28,000 in 2019 to $19,000 in 2020, according to The Knot. Trimming your guest list is one way to curb costs, but it's not the only way to save money. Wedding industry experts recommend these negotiating strategies. Choose an off-peak day and time. You can often get a better price when renting a wedding venue if you marry on a Friday or Sunday instead of a Saturday, says Noel Ahmed Snediger, the owner of Washington, D.C.-based wedding and event planning company Lilly & Grayson Events. Similarly, having your wedding in the afternoon can help you negotiate a lower rental price. Downsize the band. The average cost of a live band for a 3-hour reception is $4,000, plus a tip of generally 10%, according to Brides.com. Going with a smaller band saves money because most bands set rates based on the number of pieces or how many band members perform. Look for a band with members who can play multiple instruments, Ahmed Snediger says. Prefer a DJ? Most DJs charge by the hour, meaning you can save money by creating your own playlist for the ceremony and cocktail hour and hiring a DJ only for the reception. Hire wedding professionals who are just starting out. Self-employed wedding planners, day-of coordinators, and other vendors who only have a couple of years' experience or less may be more willing to negotiate, says Joyce Scardina Becker, a wedding planner and designer at San Francisco-based Events of Distinction. Scale back on dessert. Most wedding cases are priced per slice, with some bakers or caterers charging up to $12 a slice, according to The Knot. Ordering a cake with smaller slices can lower the tab. So can ordering a small display cake for the cake cutting and having a sheet cake in the back to serve your guests. Reuse floral arrangements. Couples spend an average of $2,000 on wedding flowers. To save money, Nicole Falls Maitland, the owner of Urban Allure Events in Chicago, suggests repurposing floral arrangements. For example, place the floral arrangements that you used at your ceremony on your dining tables at the reception. Send your photographer home early. Consider having a photographer shoot only your ceremony and the first half of your reception rather than the whole day. Another negotiating tactic? Ask the photographer to throw in a free engagement photo shoot before the wedding, Maitland says. Kip tip, how to haggle for almost anything. These strategies will help you negotiate a better price for just about any product or service. Talk less, listen more. Ask open-ended questions rather than ones that might yield an abrupt yes or no response. A common mistake is to ask, "Do you have flexibility?" says Kwam Christian, director of the American Negotiation Institute and author of Finding Confidence in Conflict, How to Negotiate Anything and Live Your Best Life. Instead, ask, "What flexibility do you have?" This sets the conversation off with the assumption that there is always some wiggle room. You'll find out just how much room there is by listening more and talking less. That lets the other person reveal more information that you can use to drive a bargain. Know when to walk away. Before negotiating, research market conditions and prices. Sellers of products with a large profit margin and short shelf life usually have more flexibility with pricing. Think seasonal items, perishables, and consumer electronics that are quickly updated and made obsolete. Consider how the deal looks from the other side. What are the barriers to agreement, and what might prompt the seller to reconsider? If your offer gets rejected, ask, "Is there a price you would accept?" The best negotiators stand their ground, so practice saying no. launch a charm offensive. Studies show that when people do business with someone they like, they're more inclined to discount the price. So introduce yourself by name, ask the name of the clerk. If you realize you need to speak to a manager to get a discount, promise to put in a good word for the person who's been helping you. You can ramp up the charm by empathizing with the other person's position. If possible, when you negotiate, emphasize your long-standing tenure as a customer and ask about the options for lower fees, better rates, or improved terms. By Katherine Reynolds Lewis. Next up is Making It Work, new platforms for a comedy couple. COVID forced them to expand their stand-up repertoire to YouTube and podcasts. Profile: Who? Noah Savage, 35, and Alyssa Wolf, 35. What? Comedians. Where? New York City. How did you become comedians? Alyssa: I was working at a job that was kind of going nowhere, and I decided that I needed to do something else to explore my creative side. I signed up for a class, and then I really lucked out and started doing shows and festivals. Noah: I walked down to the New York Comedy Club in sweatpants in 2009 and asked, how do I get on stage? Pretty quickly, I got into doing bringer shows, where I had to bring a certain number of audience members every Wednesday. How has the pandemic impacted comedy? Alyssa: All of the industry was shut down, every single bar and venue. And stand-up comedy is really only good if you're in person. Even when you watch a special on Comedy Central or Netflix or wherever, they have an audience there. You're watching people react in real time to the comedy. It has been truly a challenging year for the entire industry. People who are more successful comedians than me or Noah before the pandemic basically lost their entire livelihood last year. Noah: I have two friends who had just made the leap into full-time comedy, and they were opening for some pretty big names. Then, all of their shows got canceled. For me, as a college basketball announcer as well, I did 40 games the year before, and then last year I did 6. Zoom comedy shows and shows in the park weren't for me. I chose instead to make a web series on YouTube called Breaking 90 about golf. And I just spent my time pouring myself into that and into our podcast, The World According to Noah Savage, with Alyssa Wolf now as well. Do you have a plan to do comedy full-time? Alyssa: I have done stand-up full-time, and it's basically being a full-time freelancer. The only time you're making real money is when you are touring and doing a ton of shows and bringing a crowd. You have to be a well-known name in order to make that work. The financial side of it is extremely challenging. You think of New York City as a huge comedy town, but if you do 3 club spots in one night, you're probably only making about $100. What advice would you give to wannabe comedians? Noah: I think this pandemic has just revealed what a lot of comics already knew about gatekeepers and people telling them no or that they need an agent. You actually just need to go make what you think is funny. And then, if people like it, people like it. Alyssa: If you're getting into stand-up comedy to make money, you're in the wrong game. But if you're doing it because it's something you love, then it's like a part of who you are. There's still not a guarantee that you're going to make money from it, but there is more of a chance that you're going to figure out a way to build a career. Comedy is competitive, some say, but there's actually room for everyone, especially now that the internet exists. You can carve out your own path that's not going to look anything like the next 5 comics in line. What is everyday life like with 2 comedians? Noah: I hope every couple laughs a lot and that we're not unique that way. But I actually don't know if other couples do all the things that we do. Alyssa: I think that if there was another person here all the time, they would find us to be extremely annoying. If one of us does the smallest, stupidest thing, it's like, cancel our plans for the day because we're just going to make fun of the other person for that for the next 24 hours. This article was written by Emma Patch. This next article is from Forbes, and it's titled S&P 500 Falls from Record Highs but Remains on Track for Its Best Month Since 2020, by Sergey Klebnikov. The stock market pulled back from record highs and fell on Wednesday as the rally driven by third-quarter earnings began to lose steam, although the S&P 500 remains on track for its best month since November 2020. Key facts. The Dow Jones Industrial Average and S&P 500 declined by 0.7% and 0.5% respectively on Wednesday, while the tech-heavy NASDAQ composite was flat. The Dow and S&P 500 both fell for the first time in at least 3 days, despite a recent earnings-driven rally that has boosted the market to new record highs. The S&P 500 remains on track for its best month since November 2020, rising by more than 6% so far in October, while the Dow is up 4%. Third-quarter earnings have so far proved more resilient than expected, despite concerns about inflationary pressures, supply chain disruptions, and labor shortages. Just over a third of S&P 500 companies have reported results so far, with 83% of them topping estimates, according to Refinitiv. Big tech stocks like Microsoft and Google parent Alphabet rose by more than 4% after both companies topped earnings estimates on Tuesday, while shares of Visa fell nearly 7% after issuing a conservative revenue outlook. Shares of popular stock trading app Robinhood, meanwhile, fell more than 10% on Wednesday after reporting earnings that substantially missed expectations because of a sharp drop in crypto trading. Crucial quote, "Today was actually one of the most tumultuous, brutal, and frustrating sessions in a long time, as most sectors suffered losses, with the biggest declines coming from financial and energy stocks," says Vital Knowledge founder Adam Crisafulli. The overall market was very soft in the U.S., although this was somewhat masked by huge post-earning rallies in Google and Microsoft. The market sank late in the session, he points out, after Democrats suffered another setback in their efforts to reach a deal on the government spending bill. Tangent. As Democrats continue to iron out the details of their massive social spending plan and how to pay for it, a newly proposed millionaire wealth tax was immediately shot down on Wednesday. Moderate Senator Joe Manchin, Democrat from West Virginia, whose support is crucial for Democrats to pass legislation in the evenly split Senate, voiced concerns, effectively killing the proposal mere hours after its release. What to watch for? The NASDAQ continues to outperform following robust mega-cap tech results, and as Democrats struggle to find ways to increase taxes, kryptonite for big tech has always been raising taxes and regulation, says OANDA senior market analyst Edward Maya. With Senator Joe Manchin showing little openness for tax increases, tech prices are soaring. Next up, the Las Vegas Strip reports $2.1 billion in gambling revenue, highest quarterly win in history. Las Vegas is still on a winning streak. Casinos on the Las Vegas Strip set an all-time quarterly record during the third quarter by collecting $2.1 billion in gambling revenue, according to numbers reported by the Nevada Gaming Control Board on Wednesday. The Strip beat the previous record of $1.8 billion, which was set during the fourth quarter of 2006. Michael Lawton, a senior research analyst for the Nevada Gaming Control Board, says that the Las Vegas recovery is in full swing. "It's old news that the Strip is lagging. It's officially outpacing pre-pandemic numbers," says Lawton. The third quarter started with a bang, when Nevada collected $794 million in gambling revenue from casinos on the Strip, the highest single-month win total in state history. Sin City's gambling revenue is also up 0.6% current year-to-date compared with the same time in 2019. Revenue from the Strip during September hit $604.6 million, a 9.9% increase over September 2019 before the pandemic-induced recession hit the city. Brendan Bussman, partner and director of government affairs with Global Market Advisors, who covers the gaming industry, says he's not surprised. "It makes sense. There's been tons of pent-up demand, and the third quarter was kicked off with events in Vegas like Garth Brooks, Bruno Mars, and the McGregor fight, and it ended with the Raiders," says Bussman. "It shows that Vegas is not only back, but shows its resiliency." Statewide, Nevada is also continuing to hit records. In September, the state collected $1.2 billion in gaming revenue, marking the seventh consecutive month of $1 billion plus in revenue. Gambling revenue increased 9.4% in September over the same month in 2019. The current 7-month rally is the second longest streak of $1 billion plus in monthly gambling revenue collected by the state. The state's record for recording $1 billion plus in monthly gambling revenue is 8 months, which was recorded from November 2006 to May 2007, just before the Great Recession tore through the economy. Bussman says he thinks the recovery will continue cautiously for now. "I don't see it stopping in the short term, but I want to wait and see what happens with the economy," he says. The two biggest challenges going forward include a potential COVID resurgence, which would lead to closures, and the other concern is the U.S. economy. With fuel prices up, inflation and supply chain costs going up, these can make the consumer's wallet more limited and have an impact on domestic travel. But two things that can add buoyancy is the return of international travel to Las Vegas for vaccinated foreign nationals in November, and the continued climb of business travel and conventions, says Bussman. There are a few factors driving the rally, especially in Las Vegas. Baccarat, which historically delivered an average of 17.6% of total Strip revenues between 2016 and 2019, has been down to 13% of total revenues in 2021. But slot machines and sports betting have picked up the slack. Record slot play is filling that gap, says Lawton. This third quarter represents the highest slot win in the Strip's history. Total slot win at casinos in Vegas during September hit $355.3 million, a 15.6% increase over September 2019. For the quarter, slots generated an all-time record of $1.1 billion. This is up from the previous record set during that second quarter of this year at $1.04 billion. The previous record before this year, $897.5 million, was set during the third quarter of 2007. Sports betting is also doing its share across the state. Sports pools brought in $54.2 million in September, the third highest total of all time. Sports pool drop of $786.5 million hit an all-time record set last year. Mobile sports wagers hit $495.1 million, with the state bringing in $16.7 million. October has been trending positively, and November, with big events like the Rolling Stones playing at Allegiant Stadium, the Canelo Alvarez middleweight championship fight, and a big auto convention, could also produce positive results for Vegas and the state. You have been listening to Money Matters on Owl Radio. You can listen to Owl Radio on our specially tuned radio or by streaming on your computer or smartphone. You may also listen at your convenience on our podcast page at www.owlradio.org. Thank you for listening. This program will be replayed after 9 p.m. this evening. This is Deb Parsons saying goodbye from Owl Radio.